Merry meet. My name is Ariel, and this is
A Witch's Primer.
Basic training in non-denominational witchcraft. Join in the discussion at thedcw.999.org. That's thedcw.999.org. Blessed be. Welcome. So nice to speak to you today. Today, I'm going to start off as usual by answering a couple questions, and then we'll get into our lesson. And, you know, this lesson pretty much wraps up my basic primer course. Now, that's not to say that I won't ever do more episodes, but this is, again, A Witch's Primer is just a basic training in non-denominational witchcraft. It's not a tradition. There's nothing advanced. It's just real basic stuff. And I pretty much covered all the basics. Now, a lot of times when I was doing my beginner's class, there's a couple things that I usually did that I left out of the primer. That is history. And that's because there's so much of that already out there. It just didn't seem appropriate in the primer class. And the other thing that I've left out is the seasonal celebrations. And that's because my goal was in doing this podcast was to give it a non-denominational approach, because there are several people that like to practice the craft that don't have any desire to be involved in the Wicca aspect of it, or the Druidic aspect of it, or the religious aspect of it, depending on where you're coming from. So I've left out the gods and the goddesses and the seasonal celebrations. So I've tried to make everything very practical, just real practical craft magic. And so today is going to pretty much wrap up our basic primer. Now, like I said, I will be doing episodes still, but it probably won't be as frequently. I won't be here like every other week, like I've tried to do. For the most part, I've tried to do that. I've not always managed it, but and it's actually kind of nice for me, because since I have been doing this podcast, I've neglected my meditation podcast and all those other things that I need to do. So again, we're going to leave it up, and we're not going anywhere. It's like I said, it's not that I'm never ever going to put another episode up. It's just, this pretty much wraps it up. Okay, so let's get going with some questions here. And I had one question that I definitely wanted to start with. And I'm not going to mention the name of the person, nor am I going to actually do the... I'm not going to say verbatim what they said, because I didn't get permission, but it's such an important thing. This person emailed me because her husband has been what she called dabbling in the craft, and she was concerned as to why he would need to keep anything secret from her. She's not in the craft. She has no desire or interest in becoming part of the craft. And we had a little conversation, and I thought that this is an important thing to bring up, because this is very common. It's not uncommon for a significant other or a spouse to get involved in the craft and not the other person. And then we have this issue of secrecy and keeping something from the partner that comes up. And it's such a touchy subject. And the thing is, first of all, it's very important that you are able to discuss it with your significant other. You want to talk it out. You don't want to keep it from them, but you also want to be able to be clear that there are certain parts of your spiritual life that are private, that are only for you. And if you're involved in a group, that are only for you and the group. It's very much like if somebody was a mason, they were a member of the Masons. It's not that they wouldn't let their spouse know that they were a Mason, but they wouldn't talk about what happened at the meeting. And that's, you know, that's been going on for decades and decades. People have been centuries. People have been married to Masons. And as long as you're able to be clear with each other and talk it out and say, you know, it has nothing to do with you. This has nothing to do with you. This is not that I'm trying to keep something from you, that this is just my thing. This is my personal thing. It's my personal spiritual time. And just like I need to have personal time, you should have personal time, and that there should be personal things that you do that don't include me as well. You know, you should be able to go out with your friends and not necessarily have to include me in that, and I not have to tell me what you guys talked about. It's this myth that in order to have a really good relationship, that you have to tell your partner every little thing and not have anything personal. And that's not true, in my opinion. That's just not true. But at the same time, you don't want to ever feel like like you are moving into something and leaving them behind. I mean, you can see how that could make somebody feel very threatened and resentful of the craft. So you have to be able to be very careful about how you handle things and actually talk about secrecy. Talk about it and just say, it has nothing to do with you. I'm not keeping secrets from you that have anything to do with us. And I'm not necessarily keeping secrets from you even. It's just that this is personal. This is my time. This is my time. I need my own special me time, and I'm involved with this craft, and here are some books, or here are some podcasts, here are some things so that you know what it's really about, so that you're not worried about what I'm doing. But don't be upset if I don't share with you what I did at a meeting, or don't be upset if I don't want to discuss everything about this. And you should have something of your own too, and then also make sure that you schedule a lot of time together where you are doing things together too, so that you're not creating something where your spouse is feeling threatened by your involvement with the craft. So it's very important to be open and honest about what you're doing with the person that you're involved with, without having to divulge all of your inner mysteries and inner secrets. So you have to be able to do both. I hope that makes sense. So it's not the same as keeping private from people that you're not living with. You know, there's certain levels of none of your business. And the person that you're having a relationship with, it's a lot more of their business than it is with everybody else. But the person that you're living with, there is a part of your life that is none of their business. And there's a part of their life that's none of your business. And if you guys don't own that and have that, that's something that you need to discuss. And you need to set it up right so that you can have that. So that you can have your personal space. It's very healthy to have your personal space, regardless of whether you're involved in the craft or not, when you're in a relationship. Okay, now we also have another question. And this question is from Violet, and it's actually two questions regarding spells. Okay, first one, I'm just going to read them. It has been my experience that things I want do not necessarily come to me in the way I may have desired. Sometimes I think of this as a cost or even, quote, earning my desire. My first concern with spell work is the unseen effect it may have on another person, even if the spell has nothing to do with them. I know you say what I would do in a spell work I do to myself, but it seems to me in all things in life, we touch those we are around intentionally or not. Okay, good question. Very, very good thing. Let's just look at this way. You cast spells whether you are involved in the craft or not. Everything, from my own understanding of how the universe works, everything that's happening to you in your life, on some level, you have had a part in creating everything. Now, with spell work, what you're doing is you're trying to gain a level of mastery of that so that things aren't happening unconsciously. that you are able to work with the deeper levels of your mind so that they are starting to work in consort with your conscious desires rather than creating things unconsciously. So, yes, that's true. Just because you are unconsciously creating, though, doesn't mean that you're not responsible for those effects either. So unconsciously, you may be creating experiences in your life which have an effect on other people. You are still responsible for those. Just because you decided to take control of your deep mind and start to have some consciousness about how you're creating experiences in your life doesn't mean that now you're responsible and before you weren't. You've always been responsible. So spell work is going to be something that you're doing in regards to I'm making conscious choices now rather than creating by default. Hopefully that makes some sense. And what you were saying about things coming in the ways that you may or may not have desired. Yes, that's true. A lot of times the form is different than what we would have thought. However, if you are doing your spell correctly, the essence of the desire is actually always going to be addressed and satisfied. And I think that the idea that that everything costs something or you need to earn what you desire is true in that in the law of cause and effect, you can't get something for nothing. That's true. However, the idea that the cost needs to be painful or that the cost needs to be the cost for what you're what you want is somehow going to be something that's undesirable is something that you definitely want to look at, because that's not necessarily the way things work. If you believe that that's how things work, then they will it will definitely work that way for you. So you want to look at that. You want to look at the belief that in order to have what I want, I must suffer. You know, you need to be able to clear that up. And that's a good way to work a spell, is that, do a spell for I can have what I want and it harms no one, that it brings, that it's for the highest good of all, and that the cost is pleasurable for me. So those are some things that you might want to look at. Okay, the second part of her question. Another experience of mine is that I tend to be given what I need, not always what I want or what I think I want at the time. In the past, I've been hesitant about going for something because it may not work out. But through meditation lately, I'm beginning to think that the goal is not necessarily my goal. My goal should be to strive, not to be concerned with the result. In my mind, this thought seems to contradict what a spell is in general. Hoping you could possibly link these thoughts for me and shed some light on something I may be missing, or maybe my path does not include spell work, although I believe now would be too early to decide. Okay, that's a good one too. All right. It's important, again, I think, that you understand what is the essence of your desire. It's my understanding, and the way I teach things, is desires are there to be fulfilled. But that doesn't necessarily mean I want this and I want that and I want this and I want candy and I want chocolate and I want cars and I want furs and I want mansions and I want goodies. That's not necessarily what I'm talking about. The desire is, in my opinion, linked to what you need. But if you understand the essence of what that desire is, if you are able to really look underneath and find out what it really is that you do desire, and work your spell according to that, not only will it be for the highest good of all, but you will get what you want. And the form may be different than what you visualized. Yes, the form may be different, but in my experience, it's always better, not worse. It's never a disappointment. It's actually a pleasant surprise that this, I had no idea that it could be this good. So, again, you are casting spells whether you want to believe you are or not. You can call it something else if you would prefer, but life is a magical process, and you can't help it. You can't help but create things for yourself and draw things to yourself and attract things to yourself. Our goal here is to learn how to do it consciously, and our goal here is to do it in a way that is doing things that are going to bring you the essence of your true desires, and at the same time getting you what you need, helping others at the same time, and learning your lessons and growing spiritually. It all works together. You can't separate one thing out from the other if you're doing things well, if you're doing things properly. So one thing that I'm concerned with, my goal should be to strive. What do you mean by strive? I'm getting from the whole gist of this conversation is that you think that your lot in life is to work hard, is to suffer, is to have things be hard, and that's what's going to make you a noble person. That you'll be a better person if you have some suffering going on in your life. Now, that's not to say that that's not necessarily true. I mean, that may be true for you, but I don't think that that's necessary. I really don't think that that's necessary. I think of it in terms of exercise. If you're really exercising well, in order to get benefit, yes, there's going to be some discomfort, but it's exquisite discomfort. It's exquisite discomfort. It doesn't feel injurious. It doesn't feel like pain. It never feels like strain. It's always just going a little bit beyond what you thought you could do, and then you get this rush of wonderful endorphin. And the same thing is true for me with magic, is I'm always striving to go for a little bit more than I thought I was capable of and make my life a little bit better, not only for myself, but for everyone around me. And it should feel like exercise. It should feel a little bit like exquisite discomfort, but it should never be bad. It should never be painful. I should never be filled with disappointment from thing to thing to thing to thing to thing. If I'm feeling filled with disappointment, it's because I need to rethink my goals, or I need to rethink the way that I'm approaching what I'm going for. Hopefully that makes some sense. I would rethink the idea that striving for, that your life should be suffering or something like that. I'm not sure if that's true for you, but that's kind of what I'm getting, and that you never really are going to get what you want because that's just not your lot in life, and that's why even bother. I would rethink that and look at the fact that maybe that there are some habitual thought patterns underlying all of this that are creating those results for you that you may want to look at and say, well, maybe I can make a new choice. Maybe there's a way I can have some pleasure in my life, get what I want out of life, and learn my lessons, and be a force for good in the world, and help other people. Maybe there's a way I could have all of those things at the same time. So that's what I would do. Hopefully that helped. Okay, today we are going to do an introduction into divination and scrying. This is a bare introduction. This is not going to be a catch-all. One of the outstanding characteristics of any seasoned witch, in my opinion, is his or her ability to be able to find out the true facts surrounding any given situation. And the method of finding out the truth is what we call divination. This work stems from the root word of divine, and this means that it has having the nature of deity. This understanding distinguishes divination from mere, quote, fortune-telling, in that divination brings about divine answers to questions asked, rather than merely relying solely on the intuition of the practitioner. A good witch will always link up his or her own intuition with a higher power in order to produce excellent results. We use divination whenever we're stuck, and we don't know what to do or where to turn, or if we want confirmation about a hunch we've gotten, and always, 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 always before we cast a spell. Now, the reason for this is that we want to be clear on all the facts surrounding the situation upon which we are working so that we know how to gear the spell. For example, say I wanted to do a spell to get promoted in the company for which I was working. I would do my divination and see maybe that my energy is better spent on doing a spell to get a demo tape of my pop music heard by a big record producer instead. If I hadn't done the divination, I could have gotten stuck going for the promotion and maybe probably actually even gotten the promotion. But now, since I did my divination, instead of being the foreman on a loading dock, I have number one hit on the pop charts. So you see what I'm saying? It's always good to see what's really going on before you do your magic. There are many methods of divination. from simple wax readings to elaborate tarot spreads. And all you need to remember is to have a good reading, you must first link up with your sense of a higher power. And I will do a separate meditation that helps you do this. And then to engage any method you use. So you want to link up first and then do your divination. Divination methods are, by definition, random events that are then interpreted. So think about how many divination methods you can think of that are random events. You've got tea leaves, candle wax dripping, sand tossing, casting stones, tarot cards, I Ching coins, pendulums. Think of it. There's tons of things you could do for divination. It's important to remember that your rational mind needs to be quieted down for the time that you're interpreting the symbols. Your inner child, which we've talked about before, needs to come forth and do the talking. Remember, little children, they're all psychic until they're trained not to be. Therefore, the little child within us must be freed and allowed to play during our divination, and even all magic for that matter. Have you noticed how a child does not just see a cloud necessarily? He sees a man or an angel or a choo-choo train or Aunt Sophie. You too must let your chattering mind quiet down and notice what you're getting intuitively from your reading. After your symbols are assimilated, then you turn on your rational mind and let it present the data as thoughts, phrases, and events. Where divination relies on random events to get information across, scrying is more along the line of pure clairvoyance or psychic sight. Scrying develops clairvoyance by fixing one's gaze upon some object such as a crystal ball or a dark mirror for a period of time. The seer, which is the person doing the scrying, eventually falls into a mild trance and sees visions. And then these inner symbols are then translated into coherent thoughts. The object used for scrying, we often call it a speculum. And a speculum is usually a round object with no distracting patterns on it. The point is that you should be able to lose yourself into the object. Some examples of specula are crystal balls, like I said, a black bowl filled with liquid, or a clear bowl filled with dark liquid, a ball of black glass, an old fisherman's float, a magic mirror, which is basically a piece of black glass mounted on a frame, and I'll talk about that later. With scrying, you will want to link up with your higher power like you did with divination and then relax your gaze on the surface of your speculum. You just let yourself go and really lose yourself into the gaze. Eventually, you will get some kind of answer to your questions, either visions or just feelings or symbols. I suggest that you do scrying or divination inside of a properly prepared magical circle at first so that you can feel perfectly safe and letting go totally. I also suggest that you use only consecrated materials. And by now, you should be able to compose a consecration ritual for yourself. I don't need to give you one. Whenever you divine or scry, here's some steps you can follow. Number one, write down your exact question. Number two, link up to your higher power. And you can see the next, you can use the divination that I'm going to, I mean, the divination, the meditation that I'm going to include with this lesson. Three, employ your method of divination or gaze into your speculum. Four, totally let go and let your intuition take over. Five, take notes or have someone on hand to take them for you, or you could use a tape recorder or an MP3 recorder. And then six, assimilate the symbols you have received and compare them with your question and ascertain your answer. Now, don't worry if your divination or scrying attempts are not absolutely incredible at first. They will get that way if you practice. I encourage you to employ divination often for a while in order to truly develop this very holy talent within you. Soon you will be able to see through the illusions and know the truth at the center of every situation you encounter. So, divination... if you're using tarot cards, which is very common, as a divinatory tool, and you have not done a deep study into the tarot cards, you haven't really done an in-depth study into the symbolism of the tarot cards, what you can do is commit to memory the divinatory meanings of every card. if you have not done that yet, you're not going to have as good of an experience with the divination using tarot cards. And this is why. Your deep mind needs to link up, like I said, with a higher power, and it needs some sort of vocabulary to use. And if you have not instilled that vocabulary within your system, it's not going to be as accurate of a divination. So you you may want to, and people think that that's going to take a long time. But if you look at the little divinatory meanings that are in any good book, like The Tarot Revealed by Eden Gray, they're only very small little sentences. And if you don't use reverse meanings, then you have fewer, even you have half to memorize. So, but if you're going to be a tarot card reader, I wouldn't use that as a method of divination if you're having to constantly look up what it means. I would wait until you have committed those divinatory meanings to memory before you use that as your divination. And I would use other methods to begin with. There are there's a method of divination just using playing cards, which also requires that you commit those meanings to memory as well. You know, tea leaf reading and coffee grounds reading, that's a great way to do it. That's a really, really great way to do it, because you can see what the symbol is and then ask yourself, what does that symbol mean, rather than looking it up in some sort of symbol dictionary. You know what I'm saying? When you're using a pendulum is a great divinatory tool. You can either, what I do is if it's going back and forth, up and down, like for me to, looks like a person's nodding their head, that means yes. And if it's going side to side, like a person shaking their head, that means no. Some people have it spinning. If it's spinning counterclockwise, it means no. And if it's spinning clockwise, it means yes. Some people you can purchase alphabets so that your pendulum spells out words. And that's a good one too. Some people use the pendulum to choose produce even. You know, which is the good produce for me, which is this the ripest piece of fruit, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So those are a pendulum is great, especially for yes, no answers. Some people, what you can do, if you get like a little box of sand, you can close your eyes while asking your question and run your fingers through the sand and then open your eye and see what you see. That's a really cool one. You can take a bowl of water and ask your question while the candle is burning and then start to drip hot wax into the bowl of water and then interpret the shapes inside that bowl of water, what the shapes of the candle wax are. You can make up your own, and these are just ideas. If you did the fire of Azrael, that's a great one. Where you go to, if you have a fireplace or if you're outdoors, typically it's cedar, juniper berries, cedar chips, juniper berries, and sandalwood chips. Now, sandalwood chips are getting very difficult to find, but you could use sage just as easily, and you put that mixture on top of a burning fire in your fireplace or outside in a barbecue, and ask a question, and then you interpret the shapes that you see in the fire, and you write down what it is that you're seeing, what you're seeing. What the shapes look like. Now, for scrying, if you're wanting to do a magic mirror, which is a wonderful thing, it's really easy. Go to a store that sells picture frames, just regular old picture frames. Find a picture frame that you like. I think a larger picture frame works better. I think the larger the mirror, the better for me personally. And then what you do is you take the picture frame apart and you take some black spray paint that can be used for glass. And you just ask at the hardware store, can this be used on glass? Make sure you're in outdoors, you know, or in a very, very well ventilated room, because you don't want to asphyxiate yourself. And you just spray paint the back of the glass with the black. And it usually takes about 2 or 3 coats. Let it dry before you put on the next coat. And then you put the glass back in the frame and you consecrate the whole thing. You know, you consecrate your mirror, usually on a dark moon is a good time to do that. And then what you do is you use that for scrying. And like I said before, all you do is you lose your gaze into the black mirror while you ask for assistance in finding out the information that you want to find out. And you get and it's a great tool for trance. Now, for the crystal ball, which is another awesome speculum, you can consecrate the crystal ball. And then there's this special thing you can do if you have the time and the wherewithal, because it can take a while, but you go out under the full moon with a magnifying glass and you actually magnify that, you actually focus the full moonlight into the crystal ball through the magnifying glass. And if you do it long enough, it will actually start to sweat. You'll get it like this little sort of oily thing that happens. It can take a couple of hours, you know, depending on how big the crystal ball is. And then you always want to make sure that you keep that wrapped up when you're not using it, and don't ever expose it to sunlight. Because that is a representation of the full moon, whereas the dark mirror is a representation of the dark moon. And whatever it is that you're doing, whether it's a dark mirror or a crystal ball or some other thing like I talked about before, you want your light source to be behind you. So you want to have, like, if you've got a candle, you want it to be behind you so that your body is diffusing the light, so that you're not going to get a candle point in your speculum. You want to make sure that the light is diffused so that you don't get distracted by a shape or something in your speculum. So scrying is something that'll take a lot of practice for many people, but it's so much fun, and you really, it's amazing how psychic you can become over a fairly short period of time if you use these tools. So anyway, that's an important part of what we do, is divination and scrying, so that we can find out what's really going on before we cast a spell, or if there's a problem, you know, we can look at what's going on underneath the problem, so that when we make choices, we're making choices about reality rather than surface information that we gain from the material world or from whatever somebody told us. So anyway, so that's a nice little lesson, but boy, it's an important one. Hopefully you guys enjoy the divination and the scrying. And like I said, I'm not going away, but it probably won't be here as often because we've pretty much covered it all. However, please keep your questions coming, because I will address them on future episodes, but it'll probably be more like once a month rather than once every other week. Okay, until next time, love and blessings.